The House will come to order. Please stand if you're able. Please stand, even up at the gallery. Our flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Shoffler.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Our opening ceremony this morning will be presented by the Reverend Casey Longwood. Casey is the rector at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Oregon City. Welcome.
Gracious God, who is there at our beginnings and at our endings, be present here with these, your servants, as they pass the halfway point in their work during this legislative session. Give them the perseverance to complete the daunting tasks that lay ahead, to make the difficult decisions yet to be determined, to do what is just, even if it is not always fair. Fill them with wisdom and courage that they may not be overwhelmed by all the challenges currently facing our state, but may listen with compassion and vote with discretion. All our times are in your hands, O God, and in your time all things will be brought to completion. So in this in-between time, may those gathered here remember the trust we have placed in them and the trust they can place in you. Amen. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Reverend Longwood, for honoring us with your presence and invocation this morning. Courtesies. Let us begin with Representative Esquivel. Representative Esquivel, are you ready for our moment in sesquicentennial history?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today's History Minute is adapted from the entry of the Oregon Encyclopedia written by Jeff LaLanne, who is the archaeologist and historian for the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest. The Applegate Trail, first laid out and used in 1846, was a southern alternative to the westernmost segment of the Oregon Trail. Branching off of the original Oregon City-bound route near Fort Hall, which is now southeastern Idaho, conceived as being safer, quicker, and more secure from possible British control should a war break out over the Oregon question, the trail was intended to bring wagon trains of settlers to the Willamette Valley. Although the number of immigrants who used the Applegate Trail was comparatively modest, it had a particular significance in the settling of the Rogue River Valley during the 1850s. In mid-June of 1846, a group of 13 Willamette settlers met near Rickrell Creek near Dallas in Polk County, which started southward to blaze a new route. Eastward, over the Cascade Range and beyond Lower Klamath Lake, the route they blazed crossed northeastern California's rugged volcanic Modoc Plateau to Goose Lake. From there, they crossed the Warner Mountains, Fandango Pass, and continued over the desolate Black Rock Desert until a new cutoff joined the well-traveled California Trail along northern Nevada's Humboldt River, which most of the men stayed on the Humboldt to rest their horses and awaited the first traveler. Jesse Applegate continued to Fort Hall, arriving in early August to promote the new route to Oregon-bound immigrant trains. And it was largely due to this that the trail soon came to bear his name. Today, portions of the Applegate Trail in Oregon are closely parallel to Interstate 5 and State Highway 66. The National Park Service designated the Applegate Trail as a National Historic Trail in 1992.
Thank you for the courtesies. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. It was about 30 years ago I first became acquainted with this organization of, at the time, teenagers who wore these funny coats. Stand up here. I was in about seventh grade at Dexter McCarty Middle School. Representative Matthews knows that school very well. And my older brother had friends who were active participants in this organization called the Future Farmers of America. And since that time, I've learned that Future Farmers of America is more than just farming. It's more than just the solid, responsible use of our natural resources, but rather those students who participate in FFA, Future Farmers of America, they participate in activities such as public speaking and getting training on ethics. They learn about parliamentary procedure, and they also learn how to manage a budget. They understand the role of cash flow, both in their personal lives and in the role of business. Well, colleagues, today I have the distinct pleasure of introducing to you Oregon's slate of FFA officers. And they come from throughout the state of Oregon. And let me begin by introducing President Sam Palacio. He is from Bend, Oregon. He is a student of Representative Stiegler's district. Representative, where are you? There she is. And coming from the great District 57, the great Union County, and the great Imbler, Oregon, is Nick West, our vice president. He is my constituent. And then we have Tyson Snyder. Tyson, raise your hand there. He is from Henley, Oregon. He is a student in Representative Girard's district. Representative Girard, there you go. Then we have Derek Burbank from Dallas, Oregon. He is a student in Representative Thompson's district. Representative Thompson, we have your FFA students here. Then we have Jan Sheely. Did I get that right?
Jan Sheely.
Yeah, there we go. From Scio, Oregon. Of Representative Springer. And then Representative Thompson, you must be doing something right in your district because you also have Jordan Kuhn from Shedd, Oregon. Colleagues, would you join me today in recognizing these fabulous future leaders and students from Oregon's high schools and Oregon's slate of FFA officers? Welcome to the Capitol today. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Welcome. Welcome to your House of Representatives. Great to have you here. For the courtesies, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I have with me an intern who's been working in my office now for a number of weeks, and I wanted to introduce him this morning. Matthew Spingler is an economics student at Portland State University. After high school, he left his hometown in rural upstate New York to travel and serve communities around the country in AmeriCorps National Civilian Community Corps. While in AmeriCorps, Matthew built homes for low-income families in Durham, North Carolina, with Habitat for Humanity, helping brighten the days for patients at the Arkansas Children's Hospital, and fought fires in Nevada and Idaho. He now lives in Southeast Portland and looks forward to starting a career in a research and analysis department in state government. Please, colleagues, welcome Matthew Spingler.
Welcome. For the courtesies, Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I have been waiting 4 years for this day, and what I've been waiting for is finally being able to bring my daughter's school class down for a field trip. Fourth graders, stand up. Stand up. Colleagues, this is the entire fourth grade of Sunset Primary in West Lynn. It's led ably by two fantastic teachers, Stephanie Busby and Rosalind Pasica, and we'll hear more about them later today, but as you can see, they're each wearing a crab T-shirt, and they're here to acknowledge HGR 37. So please wave and give courtesies of the House to these wonderful fourth graders. And also while I'm standing up, I want to acknowledge my in-laws, Bob and Faith Gill. Bob and Faith, stand up and raise. This is their first time here as well. Thank you, colleagues.
Welcome to you all. Great to have you here. Further courtesies, Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we have several students here from the Beverly Cleary Middle School, which is part of the Fernwood K-8, and several of them are from our constituents of mine. The school itself is in my district. And I'd like you please to extend courtesies to our honorary pages, Stella Trepezioni. Stella, would you please stand? Thank you. Stella is interested in sports and she has career goals of becoming a doctor or a teacher, or I would encourage you to do both. I'd also like to introduce another honorary page, Emily Volpert. Emily is involved in student leadership, soccer, tennis, and singing, and her goals are to be a politician, a lawyer, an architect, and a singer. And again, I'm sure you could do all of them in this chamber. And finally, I'd like to introduce Drew Edmonds. Drew, his interests are sports, music, and the Sisters of the Road Cafe. And for those of you who know the Sisters of the Road Cafe, you know that Drew must have a big heart and a social conscience. His career goals are to be successful. Thank you, Pages.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also have three honorary pages from the Beverly Cleary Fernwood School, and I will introduce them and ask them to stand one by one as I do. Max Glicker from Portland, interested in sports like basketball, football, and track. Not sure about career goals yet. Thanks for being here, Max. Dylan Tingley, also an athlete, basketball, track, swim team with career goals, including to be a lawyer, politician, or architect. Welcome, Dylan. And finally, Cameron Cokes, or Cokies. Activities, interests include eating, that's a good one, sleeping, also important, football and baseball, and career goal is to be amazing. I can tell you're on the track for that. Thank you and welcome to the Oregon House.
And Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have the pleasure of introducing a couple distinguished honorary pages. First, could Lindsay Rice please stand? Ms. Rice attends Beverly Cleary Fernwood School in northeast Portland. Her activities and interests are dance and soccer, and when she grows up, she would like to be a math teacher for kids. Welcome to your capital. And secondly, Keegan Kyle. Mr. Kyle also goes to Beverly Cleary Fernwood. He's interested in U.S. history, biology, and soccer, wants to help people, and his favorite band, Mr. Speaker, is the Rolling Stones. Thank you, Mr. Kyle. Welcome to your capital.
Welcome to all of our pages. We appreciate your service to the House of Representatives today. Thanks for being here. Any further courtesies? Excuse me. Clerk will now open the voting system for the purpose of verifying the presence of a quorum. All members are present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bills 55, 28, 71, 87, 122, 128, 759. Passed the following House bill as submitted by the Senate. House Bill 2466.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. The clerk will read the resolution.
HCR 8, in memoriam, Lynn Maureen England, 1949 to 2008.
And colleagues, could we have a little bit of additional order in the House?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today. It's a pleasure to be here today, to rise today to introduce House Concurrent Resolution 8. It's a resolution honoring Lynn Maureen England from Powell Butte, Oregon. Lynn died last November at the age of 59. She passed away in a car accident as she was traveling from Central Oregon to Salem to attend a meeting of the Oregon Commission for Child Care. I met Lynn through her work with the Oregon Commission for Child Care, which she served as vice chair since 2004. She was a passionate advocate for children and families. Her energy and dedication were instrumental in passing legislation to help businesses provide child care benefits for their employees. She was a business leader who walked her talk. She offered child care assistance to the employees of her small business for many years. In fact, today you'll be receiving in your inboxes an executive summary of the biannual report from the Commission for Child Care, and it is dedicated to her and her memory. You'll see a picture of her on the back of the executive summary. Lynn was a woman of incredible compassion and talent who continually sought ways to direct these qualities for the benefit of her community and her profession. But more than that, she was loved by her colleagues, and many of them have joined us today to honor her with this resolution. As expressed by the Commission Chair, Rosetta Wongren, quote, "I have no words to convey how much I will personally miss Lynn. She had a profound impact on so many of us as we worked together, but I was also struck by the personal inner strength Lynn always exhibited. Her unwavering dedication to the many areas she volunteered her time is a space no other will be able to fill." Unquote. Over the last 5 years, Lynn helped shape the face of child care in Oregon. And child care in Oregon is a better place for working parents because of her efforts. A few years back, looking to help her employees in Primeville, she decided to provide on-site child care. It was a difficult financial endeavor, though, despite her skills as a businesswoman. But Lynn didn't admit defeat. She just changed directions. Awakened to the problem of affordable child care faced by many working parents, she set out to build a better system at the local and state level to ensure that this need was met. When Lynn saw a problem, she didn't just leave it to someone else. She stepped up and worked to fix it. In addition to her work with the Oregon Commission for Child Care, Lynn was a prominent CPA in Prineville, with a long history of service and commitment to the citizens of Crook County and Prineville. She was involved in a variety of civic and professional organizations, including the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants, the Crook County Natural Resources Planning Committee, and the Seroptimus International of Prineville Charitable Trust. Lynn had a deep appreciation for all things wild and the natural beauty of Central Oregon. She spent much of her precious free time hiking with her children, grandchildren, and her beloved dogs in the outdoors where she was truly at home. Lynn was a proud and doting grandmother. To her children, she was a role model and a solid rock of unconditional support and love. A large contingent of Lynn's family and friends are here this morning. Her view of the world lives on with her 5 children and 10 grandchildren, her parents, and her siblings. We are honored to have them with us today on the side aisle and in the upper gallery. Colleagues, I bring this resolution before you today so that we may honor Lynn England and her life accomplishments and her dedication to her community, and to working families across Oregon. I hope we may all be encouraged by her compassion, energy, and commitment to dedicate ourselves to the things we believe in, just as Lynn spent her life doing. Thank you, and I urge your full support of House Concurrent Resolution 8.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kotek, do you wish to close?
I would, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I would like to introduce Lynn's 5 children who are on the side aisle, if they would stand for a moment. Matt Williams, Mark Williams, Jessica Williams, Amanda Steffenhagen, and Yvonne Zubrenik. And up in the upper gallery, we have her family and friends. If you would all stand, please. They had a family reunion over the weekend, and we were able to schedule this so they could all be here. And we also have members of the Oregon Commission for Child Care in attendance today. So thank you all for being here. And colleagues, I think it's important to remember that we have a lot of volunteers across the state, people who volunteer in their community, do wonderful things, who we couldn't have the set of commissions and task forces and councils that we have in our local communities at the state level do the work they do without folks like Lynn England. And I was struck that her untimely passing came as she was traveling to go to a Commission for Child Care meeting in Salem. And I think that's, if she had a way to go, I think that would be it, doing the work she wanted to do, coming to a meeting that meant a lot to her. We're sorry she is no longer with us, but her legacy will carry on in her family, friends, and the work that she has done on behalf of all Oregonians. Thank you very much.
Those who are of the opinion that HCR 8 should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. HCR 8, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. And on behalf of the entire House of Representatives, we want to thank all of you, family and friends of Lynn, for lending her to our state. Clerk will read the next resolution.
HJR 37, designating Dungeness crab as official crustacean of Oregon.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of HJR 37. Representative Cowan and Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I certainly mean no disrespect whatsoever to the previous resolution, but what I've read of Lynn, I believe that she would appreciate this dedication to children as well. Mr. Speaker, permission to use a visual aid.
Representative Cowan requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules for purposes of using a visual aid. Is there objection? There's hesitancy, but no objection. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today we have an opportunity to join Governor Kulongowski in recognizing Dungeness Crab Day in Oregon while designating the Dungeness crab as the state's official crustacean. HJR 37 started as a fourth grade project, which you're going to learn more about from the good representative from West Lynn. And it now comes to us after unanimous approval in the Committee on Sustainability and Economic Development. Now, that's important. There's an approximately $53.2 million reason that HJR 37 was assigned to sustainability and economic development. The Dungeness crab fishery is both sustainable and a proven economic driver within Oregon's coastal communities and beyond. Thanks to sound management and minimal impact harvest methods, only the very mature males are harvested, all the females are released. The fishery has earned the endorsement of all the major environmental conservation groups for its sustainability, and it is close to achieving Marine Stewardship Council certification, the recognized standard for sustainable fisheries around the globe. This certification is also enjoyed by Oregon's pink shrimp fishery. The Dungeness crab fishery has grown to be the most valuable single species fishery in the state. During the past 10 years, Dungeness crab landings have represented between 25 and 52% of the annual landed value of all commercially harvested fish and shellfish in Oregon. Since the present season began just 4 short months ago, fishermen have landed 12.3 million pounds of crab with an ex-vessel or to-the-boat value of $26.6 million. If one applies a conservative multiplier of 2, to capture the related economic activity, those crab landings translate to the previously mentioned $53.2 million from port communities from Astoria to Brookings. Thanks to favorable ocean conditions and healthy stocks, Oregon is currently the number one producer of Dungeness crab in the world. Not only do we enjoy this bounty, but it is now sold, served, and enjoyed wherever people appreciate high-quality gourmet shellfish. In mainland China and Hong Kong, our biggest export markets, the characters for Dungeness translate into very valuable crab. My personal thanks go to Natalie Bruin and her classmates for bringing their plea for a state crustacean and HJR 37. Please help me solidify the iconic stature of the shellfish that Oregon's native son, James Baird, spoke of when he said, Dungeness crab is a meal the gods intended only for the pure of palate.
Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, as someone who has spent quite a few hours scuba diving on the Oregon coast, I can verify that the Dungeness crab is an amazing animal. Fast, powerful, cunning, and elegant in its own crustaceous way. And befitting the good people of Oregon, the Dungeness crab is fierce and independent. At a depth of 50 feet, trying to pry their vice-like pinchers off of my gloved yet still sore fingers, I can attest that the Dungeness crab embodies the epitome of don't tread on me. And yes, it's true, sometimes they even eat their own, like Republicans. Thank you to the good representative from the Central Coast for co-sponsoring and for her work on this resolution. She has done an excellent job of outlining the very real economic and marketing benefits that will come from a state crustacean. Thank you to the Oregon Crab Commission and Nick Furman for their generous embrace of this project. Colleagues, we have a crab lobby. Who knew? A big thank you to the fourth grade teachers at Sunset Primary School in West Lynn, Stephanie Busby and Rosalind Pasica, and Sunset's principal, Kathy Ludwig. They have embraced a rare educational opportunity with a contagious exuberance that does their school and Oregon public education very proud. Finally, and especially, thank you to the two fourth grade classes at Sunset. This is their bill and their project. It started with a simple homework project where they learned that Louisiana has a state crustacean, the crawfish. This, of course, led to the next logical question. Does Oregon have a state crustacean? No? Well, that ain't right. There ought to be a law. So with a unanimous vote in Ms. Busby's class, the students went to work to make the rugged and sustainable Dungeness crab Oregon's official state crustacean. And work they did. From research, to journaling, to crab art, to the brochure that you have on your desk, to selecting six of their own, Hannah, Zoe, Adina, Luca, Josiah, and Natalie Bruin, to come to the Capitol and testify before the Sustainability and Economic Development Committee. Colleagues, if you need a bill to pass, any bill, get six fourth graders with perfectly researched, concise, non-repetitive testimony at your hearing. It's a statutory slam dunk. At our hearing, under severe, often hostile cross-questioning from the committee, one representative asked how the other crustaceans would feel if this bill passes. Young Luca, responding with cool confidence, said, "Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm sure they will all get along just fine." Colleagues, Louisiana has the crawfish as its state crustacean, which, well, it's fine for gumbo. Maryland's crustacean is the blue crab. Are you kidding? Have you seen these things? They're absolutely puny. And of course, Alaska unofficially has the king crab. Big yes, but bright? Not so sure. But today, colleagues, you have the opportunity to make the beautifully rugged, fiercely independent, and yes, tasty Dungeness crab the official crustacean of Oregon. On behalf of Sunset's fourth grade, I urge you to vote aye on House Joint Resolution 37. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill?
To the resolution.
To the resolution. I have two comments on this resolution, colleagues. One is, clearly, you need the power of a fourth grade class in an Oregon school to get a state berry, for instance, to this point. I didn't have the right muscle, clearly. So let's hear it for the fourth graders. And the second comment I'd like to make is that I have a little boat, and my family's been known to crab the Nestucca Bay, and we don't even have gloves in our boat because we're tough enough to pick them up and know how to pick them up. Unlike some crabbers, we don't need this extra protection because, despite the fact that I'm in favor of it being the state crustacean, my family's smarter than a Dungeness, I hope. Thank you. I support this bill wholeheartedly. and hope all of you will too. And we've had fun, and congratulations to these fourth graders.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I too rise in support of the resolution. This is important for my district too. I live on the upper left coast, the north coast. We have a lot of crabbers going in and out of our ports up there. Some of them even turn right and go all the way up to Alaska. But we're talking about the Dungeness crab, the best crab, despite what some Alaskans think. And I'm very proud of them. A representative from the Central Coast mentioned the Marine Stewardship Designation. That is a prestigious international award, and Oregon is this is Oregon's second one. This is a huge deal, and we've got a couple more on deck. You can even find these things while clamming. Sometimes you put your gun down, and all of a sudden you can feel something. These crabs are pretty amazing. So I want to thank Little Miss Bruin, somewhere up there, for all your hard work, and let you know that if we don't pass this, a lot of us coasties are going to be pretty crabby. And if anybody wants a really good recipe for crab cakes, my son has one that even Bon Appetit's can't surpass. So please support the resolution, and we won't be crabby, and come to the coast and get your own crabs. Thank you.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, this was a very difficult bill for me, and I found myself this weekend wrestling. And I think the question that came up, what about the other crustaceans? I was particularly concerned about the hermit crabs. Just because they live alone doesn't mean we shouldn't worry about them too. We need to always be thinking about those that are very vulnerable. But last night, as I was struggling with my bills for today, I got a late letter from a concerned Oregon citizen that said, Dear Mrs. Gelser, I would like you to vote yes on HJR 37. It would mean a lot to me. It is important because Oregon does not have a state crustacean. It would help the Oregon economy, and this will not hurt you because there are probably no shrimp fishers in your district. So I would like to thank Ms. Natalie Bruin for working hard to lobby this bill and for persuading me at the last moment exactly how I should vote. And to all of you fourth graders that are sitting up there, writing letters to your legislature does make a difference, as Natalie has just shown you. Thank you, and please join me in voting aye.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Cowan, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Rest assured, many of our crab fishers are shrimp fishers as well, and they are also in support of this bill. I just have to let you know, I enjoyed this weekend being able to spend it in Eastern Oregon celebrating our grandson's 8th birthday, and the message I got just before we left was, any good grandma would bring an 8-year-old crab for his birthday. Needless to say, we had a large cooler of fresh Dungeness crab with us on our trip to Nissus. Please, colleagues, join me in supporting HJR 37.
Those who have the opinion that the resolution should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. HJR 37, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Congratulations to all of you in the gallery. Representative Roblin, for what purpose do you rise?
Possible return to courtesies.
Representative Roblin requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Up in the balcony over here, we have a special guest considering the just-passed bill. Nick Furman, I don't know, is Hugh up there, Nick? So it's Nick Furman, who is the head of the Dungeness Crab Commission. He's here visiting today, and I'm sure that he would love to speak with any and all of you that stopped by the booth that we have down in the lobby. Please extend a warm welcome to Nick Furman from the Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission. Thank you for being here.
Any further courtesies while we're here? Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3480, relating to chemical exposure of members of the Oregon National Guard, property money, and declaring an emergency.
Bill read for the first time has passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 5046, relating to financial administration of the real estate agency, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2144, relating to systems of care for youth. House Bill 2164, relating to tax subtraction for compensation received by a member of armed forces of the United States. House Bill 2165, relating to Oregon National Guard. House Bill 2244, relating to certificates of death and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2339, relating to exemptions from disclosure of information. House Bill 2408, relating to commuter rail. House Bill 2578, relating to towers. House Bill 2796, relating to motions to set aside. House Bill 2903, relating to employment agreements. House Bill 2911, relating to the disposition of property subject to self-service storage facilities lien. House Bill 2963, relating to strikes by certain public attorneys. House Bill 2981, relating to employment of persons with criminal convictions and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3094, relating to exemption from the disclosure of public records that identify persons involved in research and animals at Oregon Health and Science University. House Bill 3256, relating to unlawful employment practices involving the uniformed services.
Bills read for the second time were passed to the third reading calendar. And the next motion, colleagues, is because we're not having a floor session tomorrow, the next motion will advance bills through second reading as though we had been in session tomorrow, so they'll be on our third reading calendar for Wednesday. So the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bills 2097, 2218, 2349, 2435, 2672, 2753, 3020, and 3184 be read for the second time immediately. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
House Bill 2097, relating to care of the last resort obligations and declaring emergency. House Bill 2218, relating to wildlife from prescribing effective date. House Bill 2349, relating to value given for release of lien. House Bill 2435, relating to licensing of physician and prescribing effective date. House Bill 2672, relating to the distribution of tobacco products, corporate amenity, and prescribing effective date, and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a 3/5 majority. House Bill 2753, relating to pawn brokers. House Bill 3020, relating to unlawful trade practice. House Bill 3184, relating to funeral expense insurance policies.
Those bills read for the second time are also passed to the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 5045, relating to financial administration of the real estate agency, declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5045. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Oregon Real Estate Agency is responsible for the licensing, education, and enforcement of Oregon's real estate laws. House Bill 5045 is the appropriation bill for this agency. The agency is fully supported by fees and receives no general funds. The budget recommended by the Joint Committee on Ways and Means totals $8,637,055 in other funds and 30.63 FTE. The recommended budget makes permanent one full-time equivalent position. The position was approved as limited duration in the 2007-09 biennium, pending a review by the new incoming commissioner. The recommended budget also includes additional expenditure limitation for the purpose of upgrading the agency's intranet and completion of the final phase of the online licensing and e-commerce system. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved continuation of the agency's six performance measures with a recommendation that the agency work with DAS and LFO to review and modify three of its measures to better reflect outcomes related to compliance, investigations, and applicant testing. This budget comes to you with unanimous approval from your Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Thatcher, how do you vote? Thatcher votes aye. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes aye. Representative Widener, how do you vote? Widener votes aye. Representative Dembro votes aye. Representative Kennemer votes aye. House Bill 5045, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2067, related to sunset of tax credits.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2067. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2067 allows for an orderly review of certain tax credits not required under federal law or the Oregon Constitution. This is an administrative bill, and it's about efficiency, good government, and controlling spending. With 64 such credits on the books, House Bill 2067 calls for a regular review to make sure Oregonians are getting what we pay for. House Bill 2067 does three things. First, it sunsets those tax credits that don't already have an existing sunset. Second, it rearranges those sunsets so that the committee and the legislature can dive into each class of credits by subject area, understand the trade-offs between them and what they're intended to do, and make a decision about which ones should continue and which ones should not. Third, House Bill 2067 establishes a regular cycle for sunset and review so that in the future we're able to continue to effectively administer Oregon's tax law. In the last decade, the amount of income taxes avoided through tax breaks for individuals and corporations has grown from $5.8 billion to just under $10 billion. House Bill 2067 does not raise taxes. It allows for an orderly review of certain tax breaks, and it calls for a regular review of these tax breaks under Oregon law. The state of Oregon currently spends more on tax expenditures, over $30 billion per biennium, than it does on education, health care, and public safety combined. We want to make sure that Oregon families are not asked to shoulder a bigger share of the burden just because corporations and wealthy individuals are taking advantage of tax loopholes. Now, let me be clear. There are those tax credits that are vitally important and that we should fight to keep, tax expenditures that help Oregon families. But say the state needs to look out for ending tax breaks is exactly what we want to do, those tax breaks that are unfair. For example, there are tax breaks that reward corporations for outsourcing jobs and locating their businesses in tax havens overseas. Whether this policy is in the best interest of the state deserves discussion, and that's exactly what House Bill 2067 does.
Further discussion. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
My colleagues today speak in opposition to House Bill 2067. This bill, which was ably explained by my friend, the representative from Inner East Portland, separates tax credits into three groups, each group with its own date of expiration. There is a fourth group with no date of expiration into which should have been placed those tax credits for such things as long-term care insurance, disabled children, elderly or permanently disabled, those suffering loss of limbs and severe disability. But this is a small problem with the bill and easily remedied in the Senate. The major problem is that the sunsets in tax incentive areas create uncertainty. For example, medical providers trying to locate in Oregon's rural areas need to know for sure that the provider tax credit of $5,000 a year will be available into the indefinite future. Second, the default status of these incentives is one of termination. In other words, absent some action by this body, the tax credit will end. This slants the perception of the device by those we are trying to encourage against using it, because by adopting the sunset, we have stated clearly that it will end, not that we will carefully review the tax expenditure before we put an end to it. And finally, this device, that is the sunset, sends the signal that we have carefully considered the nature of the incentive and that we know it should end at a time certain and thus sunset, but we have not yet engaged in that careful consideration, that careful analysis, and thus we are sending a false and very negative signal to those we are trying to incent. We should be establishing a careful review mechanism that does not signal a desire to abruptly end encouragement of such things as rural medical practice, earned income tax credit, business energy facilities, and so on. We need a careful review mechanism, not an arbitrary termination deadline, which signals stop when we are, as a state, trying to say go. Please vote no on this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Bruhn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I too rise in opposition to House Bill 2067, but in doing so, I want to certainly tip my hat and give my appreciation to my colleague from the Inner East Side, as well as some others. They worked incredibly hard on this bill. It certainly wasn't done willy-nilly. It was a lot of time and attention in work groups outside of committee. So I applaud that effort. And I want to say that from a broad brush approach to looking at tax credits, this is probably the best package you could come up with. Truly is. I mean, the time and effort that went into this, if you want to look at these in a broad brush approach, this is the best method. The problem with these tax credits is they are very narrow and specific. And colleagues, most of you have looked at the tax expenditure book. I don't know what the number is, but there's dozens and dozens and dozens of these, each with very finite, unique social or economic objectives that they're trying to incent. So the problem with lumping them all together on a rolling 6-year basis is that it takes away all those very specific, very finite goals and methodologies for these tax credits, and once again lumps them in. So I would argue that while this is a good broad brush approach, a broad brush approach is not the right method or methodology for looking at tax credits. One of the things that the good representative from District 60 mentioned that I think bears repeating is that when we're looking at these tax credits, whether it's a doctor, whether it's any of these, the recipient, the beneficiary of this tax credit has to have some certainty in the outcome, both what the tax credit will do and the time it will take and how long it will be in place. When we take that certainty away, we make it much more difficult to achieve those social and economic benefits that we wish to achieve. Once again, just talking about the rural area health provider tax credit. If you're a doctor and you're looking at residing in central or eastern Oregon, and you think that there may not be that $5,000 tax credit 2 or 3 or 4 years out, it's going to influence your decision. So, colleagues, I would urge you to look at this very carefully and ultimately arrive at a no vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, last session and this session, I submitted a bill that would take care of this without throwing the baby out with the bathwash. It was called the 33% solution. It allowed this body, in fact, it made this body go through and look at every tax credit we had over a 6-year period, a third, a third, and a third on a 2-year basis for a 6-year period total. It made this committee come back in front of this body and make suggestions on whether we should keep or discard any credit we have in the state of Oregon. But that isn't the approach we're using today. Today we are throwing the baby out with the bathwash, and it could be very detrimental to people in this state as a whole. We have tax credits that should go away, but more importantly, we have some that need to stay. I hope you vote no on this measure.
Further discussion, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I think that the terms explicit in this bill are no different than writing a grant and having a grant have an ending date, and that you need to plan accordingly, and that you're going, if you haven't figured out how to come up with some extra money, then your grant ends. So I think this is prudent planning. I think this is required under the circumstances we're living under today, and I just think knowing that there's a date certain is much more beneficial to your business planning than unknown certainty.
Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, many of you know I've been working on this for about 6 years now, and this is really important bill. We have a ton of these tax expenditures. I use the scientific term, a ton of these, and we really need to look at them. The problem is if they don't sunset, we don't look at them. We get this book every year, and it comes out, and it says, okay, here are the tax expenditures, and here's what the governor thinks we should continue with. Now, if you all think the governor is the right person to decide on this, then you should vote no on this bill. If you think we're the people to decide on this, then you should vote yes. This is one of those bills that I see as extremely important, just for us to look at what we're giving away our money for. There are many, many tax credits that are good ones. I've voted for them myself. One of the problems is, you know, it only takes 31 votes to create one of these things, and it takes 36 to get rid of them. Anybody who thinks very seriously understands that we should be able to get rid of what we do as easily as creating it. Thank you very much.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I have struggled a little bit with some of the features of this bill. I will be supporting it today, but I'd like to acknowledge the representative from Far Eastern Oregon and some of the concerns that have been raised on specific credits that are listed for a future date sunset, specifically the rural medicine credit. Because of the very nature of recruiting and retaining our rural practitioners, it is important that we do have some down-the-road knowledge to take a look at. So I would strongly encourage us to bring some of those back quickly for review and to make sure that we find some stability in those critical areas. That being said, I also believe that it is our responsibility to periodically review our various expenditures, and I think that this bill will be helpful in doing that. I just want us to kind of keep in mind the time frames that are necessary on some of those that are on the list. Thank you.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'm going to have to object to this today and vote no for some of the same reasons that you've heard already, and particularly the rural medical practice. We have been trying in the North Coast area for 4 and 5 years now to get new doctors to come down. In another bill you just voted on earlier, we are going to try to allow our veterans who are returning home to receive their medical care at any facility that's certified so that they don't have to travel long distances, and especially in the winter over mountain passes. So this was kind of not an incentive to bringing more doctors to our rural areas so they can be treating people locally. We also have a bill that would extend the credit for volunteer emergency medical technicians in our rural areas. And this is something we've been trying to retain these people. It's very difficult to attract and then retain them, and it's not a very big credit. It's $250, and that doesn't even begin to pay for now the new requirements that are coming out, or to reimburse people for out-of-pocket expenses such as gas and cleaning bills, et cetera, when they respond to emergency medical calls. So for that reason, and I do agree with all that being said, I do agree that we need to review these, but I think that we need to, when we're doing something like this, if we put this into place, the doctors that we still haven't, after 5 years, been able to attract, it's 7 more years, and the way things are going, a lot of people are not wanting to go out to the rural areas because life is a little bit difficult there. It's harder, and the pay is not as good, et cetera. The hours are long, and when you're a doctor in a rural area, you really have to have a strong stamina because you're going to be on duty sometimes for 2 days straight in some emergency department. So thank you for listening to me.
Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. The good representative from the heart of Washington County just stated that to get rid of a tax credit requires 36 votes, yet today we're only going to require 31 votes to pass this piece of legislation. Is that correct?
Mr. Speaker and Representative, this vote today is a 31 vote. We have a rather lengthy opinion from Legislative Council that indicates that this bill only requires a 31 vote because it is not ending any particular tax credit. We are simply assigning a method for reviewing and sunset.
Representative Maurer.
Question of the carrier.
Additional questions? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
So if the revenue committee was to pass a bill that would raise our income taxes July 1st of 2012, or let's say a series of different taxes on 2012, would that then not require, that would only require 31 votes?
Mr. Speaker, Representative, one of the things I've been glad for in my life is that I'm not an attorney, and it is difficult for me to speculate on hypothetical future votes by the Revenue Committee and how Legislative Council might interpret that, so I would leave that to the experts.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
So I think if we raise one tax, that requires 36 votes, but if we raise multitude of taxes in the same bill, that only requires 31 votes. I suggest this, in fact, flies in the face of our Oregon State Constitution and flies in the face of our 36-vote requirement, and highly suggest a no vote on the bill today. Thank you.
Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Our current process does not practically allow for us to adjust tax breaks southerly, only northerly. Not merely because of the point that was made about simple majority versus supermajority, and I must admit I disagree with the current opinion of Legislative Council about whether it should take 31 or 36 votes to enact a tax expenditure or repeal a tax expenditure. My own judgment would those should be even and equal as a legal matter as well as a policy matter. But second, and practically speaking, every person in this room understands that if any of you or any of us were to pick a particular tax break we wanted to cut, somebody outside in that room would fight tooth and nail, apply every relationship, every trick, every promise, every ounce of power they could muster to maintain that particular tax break. My colleagues, we do not have the tools right now to adjust tax breaks in any direction other than northerly. That's why right now tax breaks are 43.5% of the potential general fund, whereas just a decade plus 2 years ago, they were 32% of the potential general fund. That is $2.4 billion. That $2.4 billion is going to look awfully attractive in just 2 weeks. I am going to say, let me close with this, Mr. Speaker, that if we are going to consider shutting down schools, reducing funding for health services, and reducing funding for public safety, we have to also, and if we are going to consider revenue increases, we have to also consider how do we address our process so that it can address tax breaks. Thanks, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, by way of information, the Revenue Committee has spent a considerable amount of its time working on one tax break this session. And we are trying to move it in a southerly direction, as someone so aptly put. So we would submit to you that this easy way out of just sunsetting gets us nowhere. It doesn't say review, it says we're going to sunset, which means a lot of things are going to go away without the long, hard discussion that we have been engaged in most of this session in the Revenue Committee on just one tax credit. This is hard work. We need to be engaged in doing it. This, as I called it, rearranging the chairs on the Titanic doesn't get us there. It just does a sunset. It doesn't do our work for us. We need to be about doing our work, which is looking at these individually. It takes time, takes effort. That's why I'm opposing this bill, because it's the easy way out. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? He does.
Thank you. You mentioned that sunset date, which the bill has, if the credit is not extended, does the sunset date not end the credit?
Mr. Speaker, Representative, the intention of a sunset is that if the legislature does not decide to extend the tax credit past the date of the sunset, then the tax credit will sunset.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you. One more follow-up question, please.
Follow-up questions. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. You also mentioned, and these questions came up, I had no intention of asking the questions, but they came up because of the conversation. You also mentioned the review. Could you point for us in the bill where review is required of the credits?
Mr. Speaker, Representative, in my time serving on the Revenue Committee, it has been my pleasure to engage in a number of the different tax issues that have come up before the committee. And one of the things that this body does is regularly review all of the policies that may come up to for a potential sunset or for an ending. And there is also some intention, as we discussed on the record, for this bill to establish an interim process by which we could take a comprehensive look at these credits.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you. I said the last question, but follow-up, please.
Additional follow-up. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative, and I appreciate the history of working on the bill. But my question was specific to the bill. Does the bill require review?
This particular bill accomplishes what this body is, many people in this body have been trying to do for a long time, which is to establish the regular sunset, an accomplishment that this body, I think, would for this body would be a significant accomplishment. It does not require the review.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
Despite the representative not being an attorney, he does a pretty good job of not answering. Nice work. I don't think the bill literally has review in it. And again, to the testimony, if we're already reviewing those bills and we're already having review of tax policy and this bill doesn't require review, one might wonder, why are we moving forward with this simple piece of legislation? We're already reviewing and the new bill says we don't have to. Might be backwards.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Mr. Speaker, I think it's important to note that this body has been in the process now for more than 2 years to work on the problem that we face with the large number of tax expenditures that Oregon has and the effect that it has on Oregon's revenue. When we started the process 2 years ago, we made certain that every tax credit that came before the committee was that a sunset date was added to those tax credits. Or when the tax credit was initially adopted, it was added to a tax credit so that there would be a required review. This bill is set up in such a way as to allow an orderly and appropriate review of all of these tax credits that have sunset dates in the bill. Approximately one-third sunset in 2014, approximately one-third in 2016, and approximately one-third in 2018. I expect your Committee on Revenue to begin that review process immediately in the during the interim in 2009 and 2010 for those that will sunset in 2014. Now, to those who said that this bill doesn't require a review, literally that is correct. But the actual reality is that a review will be mandatory because of the nature of the credits that are under review. The credits that we have put under review are essentially all of them that aren't a structural part of the tax system or haven't already sunsetted. The effect of this bill will be to force the legislature to do a systematic review. For example, in the second segment, 2016, we see rural medical practice, volunteer rural emergency medical technicians, and other similar credits that have to do with community services, education, and housing. The point of that, colleagues, isn't simply to get rid of tax credits or to make the system less stable. In fact, it's the contrary. It is to require or to force future legislatures to hold the kind of review that needs to be held in order to make determinations about these credits and other credits of a similar nature. Colleagues, we just heard in a comment made by the representative from the Upper Left Coast that they've been looking for physicians for some time, which tells me that whatever is happening, we don't have the correct mix of financial incentives or other kinds of incentives to get the physicians that we need into that rural setting. That sounds to me like a perfect reason for a review of this tax credit, along with a review of other issues having to do with finding rural medical personnel to work in our rural settings. Colleagues, this is an excellent bill. This is the kind of bill the legislature needs to adopt. We adopt a budget every 2 years. Most items in our budget law do not have continuing resolutions. They simply disappear if we don't readopt the budget every 2 years. This bill sets up a six-year cycle, a kind of cycle that the current staff and the current personnel on the revenue committees from both chambers can manage. And we need to do it in order to make certain that these tax credits are working correctly and that we get rid of the ones that have become obsolete or are no longer needed. Colleagues, I urge an aye vote on this bill. It's the kind of legislation we need for accountability in our tax system in Oregon. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today was one of those days where I was not going to plan on standing up and speaking, but after listening to this debate, I think a few things need to be said. This is to the bill, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. First of all, colleagues, we had some questions on this floor about why this is not a 3/5 versus a simple majority. The carrier said it wasn't his call. It was due to a lengthy LC opinion. Upon further question of members on the Revenue Committee, just now on the House floor, they've never seen that LC opinion. Second thing I've heard today, a $2.4 billion amount of revenue, $2.4 billion amount of revenue between now and the last speaker said between now and the year 2018. Colleagues, we are setting a precedence today by raising revenue in this state into the future without following our Constitution that requires a 3/5 majority vote. You've heard it on this floor. I urge your no vote and to do this the correct way. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Bailey, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, with all due respect to the representative from Medford, who wondered about whether or not we are throwing the baby out with the bathwater, let me be very clear. This bill throws out no babies. This bill does not end any particular tax credit. This bill does not raise taxes. This bill establishes an orderly method for examining how our state spends money. And when government spending is out of sight and out of mind, the people of Oregon don't benefit. Now, we've heard some discussion about some particular tax credits, the rural medical practice. This is an example of a tax credit that perhaps we should continue. Perhaps we should increase it. Perhaps there's a different way to accomplish the same thing that would be even more effective. But unless we have a system that requires these credits to come up before the legislature and forces us to make that case, we don't know. And in putting together this bill, advocates for all sorts of tax credits came forward to make their case and asked that their particular tax credit be exempted, made the case that their particular tax credit was more important than other tax credits we had to review. And in many cases, those arguments were compelling. And as I said to them, that's why we're doing this, to give them the opportunity to come forward and make their case, to make the case that this particular method of spending is something that's going to benefit the state's economy. This is not about raising taxes. This is about making sure that we're getting the most bang for our buck. This is about making sure that we are going to accomplish what we want to accomplish in our tax code. And colleagues, if we don't pass this today, it will be yet another session that has gone by that we have failed to do this. Now, I am in my first term here in the legislature, and I have enormous respect for the people that came before me. But I want an opportunity to be able to review that work, and I want future legislators to be able to have an opportunity to review the work of this session. House Bill 2067 is a good government bill that for the first time gives us the ability to show Oregonians that we are spending their money wisely, that we are examining what we're doing with tax dollars, and that we are effectively ending unfair tax breaks that eat into our budget in a time of economic crisis. I hope you'll vote in support of this bill. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes no. Representative Hannah, how do you vote? Hannah votes no. Representative Maurer, how do you vote? Maurer votes no. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Olson votes no. Representative Jensen votes no. House Bill 2067A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2221, related to feral swine.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2221A. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Hopefully this will be a little quicker. House Bill 2221 is another bill addressing the serious problems of invasive species in Oregon, in this case, feral swine. Feral swine, free-ranging pigs, exist in 39 states, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Feral swine can cause extensive damage to property and livestock. Their rooting and wallowing activities cause serious erosion to riverbanks and areas along streams. House Bill 2221A prohibits the sale and purchase of hunts for feral swine. This prohibition will remove the incentive for some people to purposefully release feral swine in Oregon. Violating the prohibition is a Class C misdemeanor. The bill also authorized the Fish and Wildlife Commission to impose the civil penalties on violators and to revoke all hunting licenses and tags and permits. Finally, the bill addresses the responsibility of landowners with respect to feral swine. It requires landowners to hunt or trap any feral swine that roam on their property. Alternatively, a landowner could assure that these animals are confined. The bill includes provisions for a landowner to contact the Department of Fish and Wildlife within 72 hours of discovering feral swine on their land. Landowners who cooperate with the department to hunt and trap the animals or who provide the department with a plan to confine or hunt or trap the feral swine are not in violation of this section. In 2004, feral swine were in 7 counties in Oregon. In 2008, they were in 19. They are growing. They're damaging private land that that the owner doesn't have, damaging public lands, and they're competing with wildlife range. The bill really just removes the incentive to release feral swine. If you have them confined, you can still hunt them. It's only if you turn them loose and they go onto other property other than your own. It's a good bill. Ask for your vote.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Krieger, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Can I thumbs up from right here?
Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. House Bill 2221A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Beyer, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. Speaker, I ask for unanimous consent to return to courtesies.
Representative Beyer requests unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Is there objection? So ordered. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I have a group of elementary kids from Springfield. They go to Ridgeview Elementary School. They are not presently in the gallery. They've left, but did get to listen to a very lively debate, so thank you for that. The leader of the group is Angela Daros, and there were 90 of them, and they're fifth graders at Ridgeview Elementary. If you see them in the building, I think they're gone. Are they there? Ah, okay. Well, maybe they are there.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. For the courtesies, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today we have with us 3 honorary students. If you'd like to stand on the side aisle over here, we have 3 homeschoolers. First one is Amber Quadra, and Amber would like to be in journalism when she gets into a career. I think she's almost there. She's writing really well already. And the second one is Laura Miller. Laura, welcome. And Laura would like to get into communications as well when she goes on. And then the last person we have with us is Lucas Quadra, and Lucas would like to do something in the music or photography area. Welcome to the Capitol. Enjoy your day.
Welcome to your House of Representatives. Good to have you here. Any further courtesies? Back to third reading. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3077, relating to elective share of surviving spouse and prescribing an effective date.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3077A. Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3077 is a remarkably complicated bill that is the product of the Oregon Law Commission's work group that has worked literally for 10 years to craft this bill. After 10 years, I'm pleased to report we've got it right. This bill essentially will clarify the elective share in Oregon. Elective share is a proportion of a state which the surviving spouse of the deceased may claim. It's a very good bill. I urge an aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barton, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Thompson votes aye. House Bill 3077A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The chair requests unanimous consent and consideration of HCR 7 be made the special order of business immediately following the order of business of special committee reports on Thursday, April 23rd, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next memorial.
HJM 20, urging Congress to enact legislation concerning the Medicare reimbursement rates.
The question now rises upon final reading and adoption of HJM 20. Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm pleased to bring HJM 20 to you for a vote today. It received the unanimous support of the House Health Care Committee, and for good reason. This resolution is one piece of a puzzle that will create a health care system that truly works for all Americans. The Health Care Committee has talked repeatedly about the problem of inadequate reimbursement rate for Medicaid and Medicare providers. We've seen this problem most dramatically in the frontline area of primary care, which we know is the linchpin of a system that builds health and builds wellness. As we in Oregon strive to make health care affordable, accessible to all Oregonians, and focused on primary care, we know that we will need the federal government to begin to do things differently as well. HJM 20 addresses two problems with the way that the federal government funds Medicare. First, the reimbursement rates paid to providers are generally inadequate. And second, and most relevant for us here in Oregon, they are inconsistent among the states. States where care is more expensive to deliver receive higher reimbursement rates, and those states like Oregon, which have found ways to deliver quality care less expensively, are penalized with lower reimbursement rates. Colleagues, to use a highly academic term, this is nuts. We should be a model for health, for delivery reform, not its victim. As a committee, we've seen many of the effects of this exacerbated inadequacy. Physicians are limiting their clients who are at or approaching Medicare age. Healthcare committee members heard from Oregonians whose doctors sent them letters of termination as they become eligible for Medicare. Doctors with whom they've built a relationship of trust, whom they've been seeing for years, are no longer willing or able to care for them due to low reimbursement rates. The affected seniors and people with disabilities feel abandoned. They have an incredibly challenging time finding a new doctor who will accept them, particularly in rural areas. This is a terrible situation. It's shameful and intolerable. And as our population ages, we are only going to see more demands for primary care physicians who will treat Medicare patients. It is vital that we take action now, both in investing in new primary care providers and reimbursing them properly. The federal government controls the rate of Medicare reimbursements. As we in Oregon do the best we can to cut health care costs, provide health insurance to more people, and improve the quality of the health care that they receive, we must ask the federal government for help in repairing this dysfunctional system. HJM 20 calls on the President and Congress to address this problem, and it gives our congressional delegation a necessary tool to advocate on our behalf. I'd like to thank Representative Barton and his staff for their work on this memorial and the Health Care Committee for its support. And colleagues, I urge you to join me in supporting this resolution.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Dembro, do you wish to close? He does not. Those with the opinion that the memorial should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. HJM 20, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 5528 relating to financial administration of the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 71 relating to residency of public charter school students and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 87 relating to death investigations and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 122 relating to alternative education and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 128 relating to documents issued by the Department of Transportation. Senate Bill 759 relating to local public safety coordinating councils and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the first time are passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 85 relating to government ethics adjudication process and declaring an emergency.
Bill read for the second time has passed the third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. And colleagues, you'll hear a series of motions like this over the next couple days because we're going to try to keep the queue clear so we can get House bills through and over to the Senate. So the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that consideration of Senate Bill 244 be carried over and placed in its proper order on Monday, May 4th, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have two announcements, please. First, Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and Representative Widener be allowed to change his vote on House Joint Resolution 37. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Nolan requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Widener to change his vote on H.J.R. 37. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Widener votes aye. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Democrats, please join me in the caucus room at 11:55. We will work for 50 minutes after that. 11:55.
For the announcements, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Republicans, we will caucus immediately following adjournment. And again, Mr. Speaker, tomorrow, House Republicans, 11 o'clock caucus. Thank you.
Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, on your desk, you'll have a handout from my desk about OSU Day at the Capitol. Because we are not meeting on the floor tomorrow, this is on your desks today. So when it tells you that there is a reception this evening at 4:30 p.m., that is not till tomorrow. So take this back to your office, read it tomorrow, join us at the reception. Benny the Beaver will be joining us.
Further announcements. Representative Nolan, are you in the queue again for announcements?
I am, Mr. Speaker. Because we're not meeting tomorrow, House Democrats will also caucus at 11 o'clock on Tuesday.
Seeing no further announcements, remonstrances. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, last Wednesday, the Oregon Court of Appeals handed a resounding victory to Dorothy English in her long fight against Multnomah County and the state's broken land use system. I rise to congratulate her efforts. Mrs. English was a shining example of Oregon's pioneering spirit, a woman who was willing to fight for her principles and take on forces who were much bigger and powerful than she was. When she and her husband purchased their property in Multnomah County in 1953, Dorothy had no idea the struggle for justice and fairness that she was about to undertake. Dorothy was not a developer. She was a property owner who, like most other property owners, loved her property, not just for its natural beauty, but for what it represented: freedom, opportunity, a retirement nest egg, a home for her children and grandchildren, and a place to call her own. Through their hard work and efforts, Dorothy and her husband built a home, cared for the land, raised a family, and made sacrifices to pay for the property. It was their hard work and sacrifice that improved that property, not Multnomah County's. So you can imagine Dorothy's sense of shock and amazement when Multnomah County and the state of Oregon succeeded in adopting land use laws that virtually stripped her property of its value. Today, Dorothy's 20 acres is zoned for commercial forest use by Multnomah County. I challenge anyone to travel to Dorothy's rural neighborhood and tell me how this rural residential area can possibly be zoned for commercial forest use. As Dorothy used to say, it's a joke. Like so many other rural areas throughout Oregon that are mislabeled as farmland or forest land, Dorothy's neighborhood is a shining example of why our statewide land use system is broken and must be fixed to reflect economic reality, not some planner's version of utopia that can only be achieved by stripping our fellow citizens of their property rights. But while others gave up, sold out, and moved on, Dorothy stood up to the county and refused to back down. Dorothy was not an activist by nature. Multnomah County and LCDC made her one, and I suspect that today they regret ever doing so. Dorothy's decades-long struggle for justice was finally rewarded last week when our Court of Appeals ordered Multnomah County to pay $1.15 million to Dorothy's estate to settle her Measure 37 claim. With interest and attorney's fees, Dorothy's judgment will likely exceed $2 million. It's too bad that Dorothy cannot collect the judgment from the personal accounts of the county officials who mistreated her for the last three decades. Of course, as most of you know, the sad reality is that this story is that Dorothy is not with us to realize the fruits of her efforts. On April 10, 2008, she passed away. She's a shining example of someone who did not back down, someone who can make a difference by overcoming extraordinary odds. One person can make a difference. Rest in peace, Mrs. English.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Wednesday, April 22, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Wednesday, April 22, 2009, without objection. The House adjourned.